Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back talking about more of Dune Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, we're going to be talking about minute 17 to 18 today.
Yep.
We just had our small council on yesterday's episode discussing the fate of what is to happen with Paul and Jessica, and right now we're just eating.
Yeah. We get a little chow time.
Yeah.
turns out we get a drug trip later, which is fun.
Hey, we love having our food laced with drugs. But we start this minute with Paul almost lecturing Jessica about how the Bene Gesserit propaganda has taken root.
Well, I don't know about lecturing.
Well, he's like, see how your Bene Gesserit propaganda has taken root.
Yeah, which sounds like a snide, like, remark from him.
Sure.
But, like, the next thing that he says, I'm like, oh, so you're, like, okay with it.
Oh, yeah. Because he's like, I must sway the non-believers.
Yeah. I was like, do you like this or not, dude? Like, what is going on?
He says there are some that already believe that I'm their Messiah, and there are others that refuse my presence. I must sway the non-believers.
Yeah.
Which is like, holy shit, dude.
It's like, definitely, I think he doth protest too much.
Definitely getting like the whole thing from part one, or at least in the book, where Paul is just tweaking out of his mind, mentatting like crazy. And he's like, Jessica, you dumb fucking bitch. Maybe that's
keep up, Mom.
Yeah. Maybe like that's the kind of attitude or whatever that he's got here.
Well, if you want to take a deeper read into that, it's like, I think he does not like this, but he also knows that he can't change it now. It's like things have been set in motion, so at least he's going to go along with it, but he does not like what is happening.
Yeah. He just kind of has to stick with it at this point.
Yeah.
And he tells us, the audience, why. Mm-hmm. Because the only way that he can get at the Emperor is to disrupt spice production.
Yeah.
And if he's going to disrupt spice production, he has to have the Fremen on his side.
Mm-hmm.
So lean into the Missionaria Protectiva. Go with the Lisan al Gaib thing.
Yeah.
? Profit.
Exactly. You know, win on Arrakis, do as the Arrakeens do, I guess.
Yeah. Jessica's immediate response to this is, your father didn't believe in revenge. And Paul's like, yeah, well, I'm not my dad. Because bear in mind, Paul is 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a fucking piece of shit teenager.
Yeah.
I'm not my dad.
Yeah. This conversation, I mean, doesn't happen in the books. This is exposition to kind of catch us up to where we've been, or where we're going, I guess.
Why Paul needs to do what he needs to do.
Yeah. Whenever they have these moments of, hey, this is not exactly taken from the books, this is something that we added in to the movie to move the story along, I believe they take these opportunities more than others to introduce some modern like language and ways of speaking into the movie.
It's kind of like in part one when Paul's like, y'all right?
Yeah, you good?
Yeah, you good.
So that part where he says, yeah, well, I do.
Yeah.
Like, that just feels like something we would say today. And it's like, okay, whatever. It's a step back from the elevated form of speech and cadence and word choice that we get from book Paul.
Yeah. Paul continues to eat and then suddenly just like, whoa, and like stops eating.
Yeah.
And we, for a moment, he's just like staring at his food.
It's important to know that Chani, who is sitting over in another group, she sees all this happen.
Yeah. I was just going to say, he's staring at his food, and then the camera cuts to Chani, who's like looking back at him and is like, what the fuck?
He goes, you good?
Pretty much. And then we get,
it's drug time, baby.
Yeah, we're back on Paul. We get our characteristic orange-pink hues kind of rising up from the bottom or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was days earlier when Paul had said, fanatical legions worshiping at the shrine of my father's skull. And what do we see here but a picture of Leto and a skull and people bowing and praying towards it.
Yeah. This is a
holy war in my father's name. Or a holy war in my name.
Yeah, something like that. This is an altar that it looks like it was carved directly into the side of a rock face.
Yep.
Skulls on top is a nice portrait of Leto. Painting, not a picture.
No, they got a Polaroid.
Yeah. And yeah, there's just a bunch of Fremen bowing down to it. We don't get it. It's a pretty quick vision.
Yeah.
It's a very, just like a, not a blink and you miss it kind of thing, but it's a very quick one compared to the ones we've had, in the previous movie and the ones that are to come in this one.
Yeah.
This is a very tame one, it feels like.
I think this is just kind of a reminder, like, oh, hey, yeah, by the way, spice fucks with Paul.
Yeah.
More than it does with normal people.
Sure.
Here's a little callback to that one scene in the still tent from part one.
Right, right. Yeah, and then we kind of fade out of this vision pretty quickly. And as we're fading back into Paul, that's where the minute ends.
You could say that we went back to reality.
Ah, yes. Well, given the state of how they are all sitting on the ground, cross-legged and everything, I would have to assume that gravity is still with them.
Yep.
So, speaking of sitting on the ground, I want to circle us back just a little bit.
Okay.
To the different groups that we get shots of as the as Paul is, you know, giving his, some people think I'm the Messiah, some people don't, others, yeah, that kind of stuff. We rush through that part, but I think it's worth noting that when Paul says some already think I'm their Messiah, the camera cuts to a group of older people, important to note, older people, who are looking at him with like admiration.
They're bug-eyed at Paul. They're just like, oh, holy shit.
Yeah. It's like seeing your favorite celebrity on the street kind of thing.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Like that one time I held hands with John Hamm for a little bit. That was fun.
Oh yeah. I forgot that we used to like interact with people like that regular basis.
And yeah, it was like, I liked that. Combined with the juxtaposition of when he said others, and it cuts to Chani and her group of friends, the young people, and they're just like looking at him, kind of scowling, and just a lot of like reservation and suspicion, it looks like. And that's when he says false prophet.
Yeah.
There. So
I must sway the non-believers.
Yeah. Right. Right. Okay, buddy.
Chill out. You're 16.
Yeah. Right. So I just wanted to make sure that we talked about that, because again, this divide of the old guard versus the new guard, the old folks versus the young folks, and how they approach Fremen beliefs is going to be a core theme to the movie, especially in the next couple of minutes that we get to.
Yep.
But as a running theme throughout the whole thing.
Definitely near the end of next week for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
While we're talking about the group of the older Fremen, and I had this note saved for later, but I guess it matters now because we've seen this one. There's one particular Fremen man who has a very white beard and very white eyebrows, and like he's very like distinctly featured. He's not any particular character in the movie. IMDb just lists him as Fedaiken leader, but he is played by Joseph Bedelim.
Okay.
Who didn't really seem to have much on his IMDb page, in terms of like acting, but like definitely a lot more stunt work and stuff in the past. Like he had done some stunt work in Dune Part One.
Oh, cool.
And some other stuff. But we had seen that particular Fremen earlier in the sequence. He was one of the ones carrying Jameis's body. And we will see a lot more of him later on throughout the movie as well. So I just wanted to point him out in particular there.
He's getting the Lanville treatment, this movie seems like.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less dialogue.
Sure.
You know, Lanville had like
a line.
No, Lanville had a few different scenes that he had things going on in.
In part one?
Yeah.
Yeah, background stuff.
When we first see Duncan, Lanville was the one that told everyone to put on their shields when they landed on Arrakis. Lanville was the one that told Leto and Gurney to get inside because it was getting too hot.
Yeah. He wasn't the one who said...
Lanville was at the small council.
He was also at the gadget unveiling in the bunk or the quarters.
I don't know if he was there.
I thought we said he was in the background. I know, whatever.
He might have been in the background, but
we'll talk about Lanville plenty.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We'll get to Lanville later. But before we wrap this episode, I want to talk about some cutlery.
Okay, let's do it.
So, this is all from Art and Soul, our favorite book that tells us all about the production of Dune.
Heavily referenced, never sponsored.
Yep. From the notes here, Denis wanted the utensils and everything that they're eating out of to be very purpose-built. Mm-hmm. They needed to be half fork, half spoon. So they're canonically using sporks. And they will need to have the same one their entire lives. The food that they're eating is a low moisture, unsurprisingly, porridge that used dried carrots and licorice root to make the snacks look a bit more spice infused.
Okay. Gotcha. That's cool.
Yeah. I wish there was some kind of like visual element to this podcast because it shows the actual like spork thing that Paul is using in the production in here.
Now, okay, so since you have a picture and you're looking at it,
yeah.
What is the fork to spoon ratio? Because there's a difference between a spork and a spoon.
Well, so I wouldn't... Okay. I'm going to try and describe this as best as I can.
Okay. Paint us a picture.
Imagine a spoon. Just a bog standard spoon.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Cut out about a half inch crescent from the tip of the spoon. Okay. So it almost looks like ant pinchers in the front.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So you have that in the spoon side. But then, unlike a regular spoon, which has the bowl, which then tapers to a long, thin handle.
Yeah, okay.
Your handle doesn't taper as quickly. It is a very long, tapered back end.
Okay, so like a camping spoon, almost.
Kind of.
Yeah.
With two distinct fork points on the other side of that tapered back end.
Interesting. So it's like fork on both ends.
Yeah. Tiny fork on the spoon side,
full-on
fork on the back side.
Okay, I like it.
And then just a clay bowl.
Okay. All right, well, if it had any kind of cutting abilities, I think we'd be getting into blade territory.
The slow blade penetrates the porridge.
Exactly. All right, cool. Well, that's leave it up to this movie to create its own cutlery for this.
It's very cool. If you go back in the movie and you go through, not second by second, but if you watch it and pay close attention, you can definitely see the way that this utensil is designed.
Okay. Would you put this into the category of merch you would buy if they ever sold some?
No, but I'm also not really a merch collector.
Okay.
Kind of person. So
I would get one to put in my camping
I would probably
stuff.
Just get one of these just to have as like a... utility, like
sure
spoon spork whatever thing, but
well, you know, it's like in my backpacking stuff, every ounce counts, so as many times as you can combine a tool to use, you know, multi-purpose things.
Hey, no unitaskers.
That sounds like a perfect thing for this, which is a very Fremen way of thinking about things. Cool. All right. Well, thank you for that.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Anything else from the book?
That is all that we have for now. We're going to have a little bit more tomorrow to talk about a character that really was very minor in the books, but will become pretty important in this movie, I think.
Yes, we will. I predict tomorrow's episode may hold the record for the longest one. That we've done so far.
All right. Well, we'll have to see.
All right. Cool.
In the meantime, you can find us online. We are available in a few different places. On Blue Sky, you can find us at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us, and we will see you tomorrow for another episode of the Dune Minute.
All right. See you then.